This podcast is brought to you by the Triathlon Media Platform and community, Triathlon Insight. What is up, guys, and welcome to a new episode of Grit Grind Girona. This is already the second episode recording, and the first episode recording was with Vincent and Louis a couple of weeks ago. I think it was a very cool podcast, and yeah, we actually got a lot of nice messages about it and a lot of good feedback. And I think it was a really successful first episode. And yeah, without further ado, I think today I also have a very, very interesting guest, and I think something completely different than talking with athletes himself, like a sports professional athlete, but this is more about coaching. The guest I have today is none other than John Wakefield. John is the director of development at Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe. I think its position he has held already since 2023. Prior to this, he also worked as a performance coach and a sporting director at the UAE Team Emirates from 2018 to 2022-ish. And yeah, among other than he helped Tadej Pogacar win the Tour de France over there. I think a lot of successful things happen over there. He has a sporting background in motocross and also mountain biking. Yeah, and then in addition to his team roles, he is the managing director at Science to Sport in Girona and South Africa, not only in Girona. It's a performance cycling lab that deals with bike fitting, rider testing, and performance coaching. With this company, they continue to mentor and develop athletes at the highest level, but also at the amateur level, I think. John, I'm very thankful that you're was able to come to the podcast and being able to do this recording with me.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. It's more of an honor from my side to be here than you having me on here. I can say that.
Well, the starting is off, just as last week or last episode, I think it's nice to, first of all, get to know you a little bit more, talk a little bit about where you're coming from and how do you get involved into sports, et cetera, et cetera. After that, I think it's nice to have a little bit of conversation about Girona.
Yeah. I mean, it's always good to take a look at Girona.
In the end, we are sitting in the office from Science to Sport in Girona. So have a little bit of chat about Girona. After that, I think it's nice that we have we can go through a couple of questioners from listeners. I have asked a couple of listeners to come up with some questions. I think it's nice.
I really hope that my ex didn't get hold of those questions.
We'll see about that. And I think eventually at the end of the podcast, I think it would be really nice to talk with you and look to the future. I mean, there's of course a new cycling season for Bora coming up, and the future is bigger than only 1 year for sure. And I think with going through all kind of these kind of things, we have a really nice podcast coming up. So let's start with getting to know you a little bit better. I mean, we only met like I think maybe once or maybe not even. I'm not even sure yet, but. Again, thanks so much for being over here. And I think I would like to start off getting to know you a little bit better with a couple of quick fire questions.
Sure.
All right. Away. What is your proudest achievement in your sport as a coach?
Sure. It's a good. It's a good question that because you could go. Yeah, I don't think I have a single moment. You know, you could say it's, you know, winning a world championship title with an athlete, or it also could be getting somebody back from a really serious injury or a really bad time in their career where that sort of rock bottom, do they carry on, and then kind of bringing them back up to a really good level. So
yep.
They both kind of have the same effect and that same feeling back, because that outcome is, you know, it's as great. So to find out one is, yeah, I think it would be hard to tail it, but, you know, winning a world championship, winning the world tour stage or a race is big, but also kind of helping an athlete back to their top is also a really good feeling for me.
Cool.
So a little bit of everything, if you want to say it that.
Sure. Well, that's maybe the cool thing about coaching as well. It's not only one thing. Yeah.
Yeah, correct.
What has been the toughest moment as a coach?
And yeah, questioning if you are good at what you do, or if you are, you know, you often have in those moments where you, if you are battling with an athlete or in an environment or a project that you're doing, and you definitely question yourself, like, should I be, am I doing the right thing? Am I good enough? Yeah, those thoughts are pretty tough to deal with.
Do you still exercise yourself?
Jumping to conclusions is probably one of my main traits. I would say, like, I travel a lot, so it is hard to pinpoint, but when I am home, I do try exercise, put it that way.
And you say it's cycling, is it running, or is it something different?
Lately, I've gotten into running, more trail running than on the tar. My attention deficit doesn't really allow me to just flat out on the road, so I've really gotten into that, the trail running aspect, and in Girona, in fairness, it's really good. You know, nobody kind of hears me breathing when I'm out on the trails. Otherwise, I ride a bike. I like to ice skate when I'm in Andorra. Like, yeah, and I've lately now gotten into snow skiing, but it's not very good. But right.
What languages do you speak?
English and Afrikaans. Fluently, Afrikaans is obviously South African. It's a derivative of Dutch, so I can understand Dutch really well.
We can actually do this podcast in Dutch, maybe even. Well, yeah. Isn't it good?
I'd rather do English, right? And then I can speak very little Italian and very little Spanish. So,
all right, cool. Who's one person you look up to for inspiration?
Good point. I've got a friend, Scott Richardson. I look up to him a lot for inspiration. My business partners in total, that's Science to Sport, but obviously Jeroen Swart, we've had a really long road to where we both are today. I would probably say that and my Bull Terrier dog. I look at him for inspiration. He's always happy.
All right, well, that's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah.
What is your favorite sport outside of triathlon, cycling, running, mountain biking?
Motocross,
yeah, I think so.
Heads up, there's nothing better.
We can come back to about it in a while. If you could have a conversation with anybody, who would it be?
Mike Tyson would be one. Motocrosser Chad Reed would be another one. And I'd like to have more conversations with my father, although he's passed away. But there are a couple of obvious parenting techniques I'd like to question.
All right, nice. Yeah. Who is the funniest athlete you know?
Dry humor would be Matthew Beers.
Okay.
Completely dry humor. Mountain bike rider back in South Africa. And then if I take on Red Bull at the moment, I would say Ryan Mullen is pretty amusing at times. And then... Yeah, I would probably say them, to be honest.
Cool. Yeah. Right. Are you more of an early bird or a night owl?
Early bird. I love early, but I'm asleep super early.
All right.
Yeah.
If you could visit any country tomorrow, where would you go?
I'd like to go back to Thailand.
Thailand?
Yeah. I've been there a few times, but I really, really enjoy it there.
All right.
Yeah. Culture's good. Food's good. People are really friendly. It's cheap. I really enjoy it there. Yeah.
All right. What is a podcast or a book you would suggest to others?
Podcasts, I suppose, if I am personal, it's a motocross one, Pulp MX. I really enjoy that.
Pulp MX?
Yeah, Pulp MX. It's just everything motocross. It's really good. They have good guests and stuff on. Book-wise, how do you kind of influence people and not make friends, surrounded by idiots, I like.
Okay.
And then I like, in general, I like biographies. So if it's a really good biography, I would suggest that. Again, going back to the person I said I'd like to speak to, Mike Tyson's for sure, if he's really good.
Cool.
Kind of his whole life to date.
Last question about this segment. What's one thing still on your bucket list?
I'd like to see... I'm kind of into my concerts at the moment. So, like, there's a couple of bands I'd like to still see. That's on my bucket list. Like, Duran Duran is one of them. Although I've seen they are playing in this year, so I'm going to try to go see it. But, yeah, bucket list. To be honest, I don't really have a bucket list. If I kind of have something I want to do, I typically go and do it. Not specifically, I'm only going to do this at a certain time.
All right. Well, thanks for the answers. That's the end of this. We try to always do it like rapid fire kind of thing, but it always ends up a little bit more answers. But that's a good thing. Coming back to it a little bit. I mean, you told you're from South Africa, right?
Yeah,
correct. Since when did you move to Girona?
I'd been coming in and out of Girona since 2014. Although I landed here by pure chance, it was actually a fluke. And Mike Posthumus, our one business partner, had done a conference here 2 weeks earlier. And I was actually stuck in Barcelona. He said, go to Girona. You know, it's really good. Go ride your bike. He gave me a couple of routes. And I was like, man, this place is great.
Yes.
Although there was nothing there at the time. And I'd come back every year. And then the more business I did in Europe, I'd stayed longer. But then I officially packed up and moved in 2019, like I think October 2019, around there, is when I officially packed up and from South Africa and moved.
And you told me, you've mentioned it a couple of times already, motocross.
Yeah.
Is that the first, the first big thing where you got involved with in sports, right?
Correct. So it was essentially my background. I kind of raced locally forever, since I was a kid, on and off. And
is it a big sport in South Africa?
It was. It's now a lot smaller. And also to go from South Africa internationally is super hard. You know, the percentage rate is almost close to zero, unfortunately. But I had 2 years of really bad injuries, but I was really into the sport itself, into the training aspect. And then how I kind of fell into a coaching training role was when I decided, okay, enough was enough. A very good friend of mine that I was living with at the moment had said, hey, you know, come and train me, because he was still very competitive in his club.
What kind of year was this?
This was towards the end of it was actually halfway through 2005 is when it was. When I'm halfway through that season, I was like, I'm over this. And then he had come to me at the end of that season, like August, September, and he had said, oh, will you train me for next year? And then as things do, it just kind of blew up, you know. And then one thing led to another, and here I am
talking to you in Girona.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So, but when did the, you of course came first of all from the background of motocross.
Yeah.
How did it evolve into, like, I think first cycling then?
Yeah.
Or automating maybe?
Yeah, so I wanted something to do, and during my rehabilitation process, the gentleman that was doing my rehabilitation was an Olympic cyclist for South Africa back in the day. And because I couldn't run, he had said to me, get on a bicycle and go for it. And kind of as it does, that bug bites, you know, and started kind of racing locally, mountain bike and road. Mountain bike kind of became more popular later on. So you landed up transitioning to that.
Well, for sure, mountain biking is, it's massive in South Africa. So, okay, Tapig and these kind of things, right?
Yeah, correct. And then from that, I met... Through that process, but also the motocross coaching side, I met my now business partner, Jeroen Swart, who is obviously a medical doctor, and I used him in terms of sending injured riders and what have you there. And he mentioned to me one day, like, hey, why don't you get into cycling? You know, you're already riding a bike. Why don't you get into that like kind of coaching aspect of it? And that's kind of how it landed up. It was by pure chance, knowing someone who was good to know.
Cool. And how did you ended up in, just in 2019 kind of, or with a team like UAE?
So we had on, Jeroen had Science to Sport, but it was just him.
Yeah.
And then from that, I came on board as a partner with him. And then we grew it.
That was still back in South Africa.
Yeah, that was back in South Africa. What was that? That was like, I think, 2010 to maybe 2011, I think 2010.
Yep.
And then kind of as we grew, I suppose, profiles grow. And we were actually here in Girona looking at business opportunities and kind of opening what we have now. And, the phone rang for him, and it was the team asking, from the medical director position. And then a few days later, the phone rang from my side from a coaching aspect, and then obviously negotiations backwards and forth. And, you know, if I'm honest, I was a little bit hesitant being on a team because, you know, you kind of you know, you have your own company, you can do what you want.
For sure.
Yep. Well, within reason. That just doesn't sound right. Yeah. But you can do everything. And then I was kind of like, it's a big structure and everything. But you just did it anyway. Like, I jumped on board and here we are.
Well, was it from, like, how many people were you already coaching for Science and Sport in the Science 2 sport?
Yes, I read.
And how much did you get at UAIDA? Was it like a massive, like, more people?
So when I first went to UAIDA, I was given 8 riders to work with.
Okay.
As a company, although to date, as a company, we have kind of just over 332 wow. athletes.
Jeez.
Around the world on our books, if you want to call it that. But at the time, I obviously had a good volume in South Africa. Went to UAE and I was given 8 athletes to work with. Kind of like same thing, but just different. And then kind of landed up taking on some more responsibilities, like obviously the DS work. But also I helped another gentleman do all the altitude training camps and the general training camps and like a bunch of other things, which is pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what is it exactly, to give the listeners like, a little bit more of an idea of what you do at a team at UAE or now Borg. What is it exactly that you do? I mean, you're a coach, but what?
Yes, so it's 2 different roles, obviously, from team to team.
Yeah.
My primary job was on both teams when I first went was from a coaching aspect. In UAE, I landed up, they'd asked me to do sporting director work, and then I worked as a performance coordinator, which is, you know, training camps and that sort of realm of work.
Yeah.
When I came to, which was then Bora Hansgrohe without the Red Bull, I just wanted to coach. I wanted to go a little bit back to my roots in terms of like passion and love and whatever you want to call it. And they were super respectful to it and they gave me that opportunity, which I am thankful for. And as things happened, I now landed up being the director of development for their rookies program, which is, you know, essentially the goal of that is to identify and develop a talent or talents over the next 5 to 10 years to win the tour within their system.
Within their system, within the team, outside of...
Correct. So it's not like, as an example, buying rider X for X amount and having him win immediately. They want to take a 70-year-old through the system and have him win. And then I still do, obviously I still coach some of the world tour riders.
Yes.
A very select group now just because of the volume of...
Yeah.
And then 1 or 2 other sort of projects that we work on to improve the team.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, thanks so much to like... explain a little bit what it is that you do right now.
Yeah.
For sure, we come back to everything, talking about coaching and philosophy, these kind of things later on in this podcast. I think for now, to like continue a little bit about like getting to know you a little bit more, we can have a quick conversation about Girona.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the city where we're in right now. To start it off with, I would love to have another round of quickfire questions. I hope quickfire answers maybe as well. I don't know. But as well, we can come back on it.
Cool.
Let's start. Well, the first thing you actually already mentioned, since when are you living in Girona? It's 2019.
2019, yeah.
What's your favorite place for coffee in Girona?
Yeah, it's a good question. Camino I like Hidden. I suppose those 2 places.
Your own place.
Yeah, it's my own place. Now that I've got a really good machine, so I'm just blowing.
Cool. What is your favorite bike loop?
I like it, as cliche as it is, I like Incapi loop. And I also like where you go out to a lot and around through Banyoles and back.
Yeah.
Cool. 2 really common ones, but I really like them.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah.
Well, this may be a little bit of a new thing for you, I don't know, but you already mentioned a little bit. Do you prefer running on the Vias Verdes or trail running on Nails and Gels?
Trail running Els, because I kind of run from where my house is.
Nice, cool.
Out the back, which is up in Montreux, so it's straight over into the back.
Nice, yeah. Just above or beneath the main road over there, and then you're...
it's good.
Already there,
cool. Yeah.
Have you been to a football game of Girona?
Unfortunately, I haven't. It's literally sacrilege. I'm embarrassed to say that. Yeah. And it's not for a lack of trying. I've tried.
Cool. What is your favorite restaurant in Drouin?
Cinefos, I enjoy. But for day-to-day stuff is either Ors, just because I know everyone there, yep. Or Comuna, I enjoy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides work? Well, you said already Andorra maybe a little bit as well, but...
Yeah, I spend a lot of time in Andorra. Other than that, I try not to see people. That's one thing I enjoy doing. Also, it sounds weird, but I enjoy walking through the Barry Vale, you know, when it's busy and stuff, or whenever, like weekends and that, I really enjoy just walking the streets and people watching, to be honest. Yeah.
Cool. What do you dislike the most about Europe?
Cycle tourists, because they kind of just don't respect the basic rules of Girona, which causes trouble for people that live here,
yeah.
In all honesty. Yeah, it kind of gets to me a bit. And then the other thing which I do understand and I respect, but I do, like, the one part I don't really like is that at the moment, which is that sort of like non-Catalan people that live here. It's a bit of an odd one to me, yeah. But I understand it, but it's an odd one. But those, I suppose, are the two things. But mainly that I can live with because it's a culture. But the cycle tourists that come here and just disobey everything kind of gets to me quite a lot.
And, well, I don't say ruin, but in some way as well, they ruin a little bit for the people who are following the rules.
Yeah, 100%.
It's a tough thing. Last podcast, Vincent Louis spoke about it as well. I mean, especially right now, since a short while, they actually are giving fines out, right? Where you're not following the right the directions. And so again, people who are visiting Girona, take a look at the rules and try to follow.
That's it. It's like, and there's not many rules. It's just like obey the handful of rules there is, you know? Yeah, that's it.
All right. And what do you like the most about Girona?
I like the people. I like it's calm, you know, especially coming from South Africa, it's a completely different culture. From a security and safety aspect, it's completely safe, although some people disagree with me on some aspects, but I mean, it's completely safe. It's a very good community, I believe. Like, everyone is friends with everyone, in a way, and like everyone helps everyone. And what I do like, it's a super active community, you know, so it's not that you're sitting around doing nothing all the time. You can always go do something.
Yeah.
If you want, you can always do something.
True.
Yeah.
Nice. And last but not least, do you have, for people who are visiting or living as well already over here, but do you have a hidden gem, something people you think don't know about in Drouin?
It's a good question. What's it called? I don't know what the name of it is, which is really bad, but that's a new little, if you walk down Carinot and you turn right just before the bridge, there's the ice cream or whatever shop on the right-hand side.
Yeah, I know which one.
Yeah, it's really good. It's called... I don't know, it reminds me of like a sleeping tablet, whatever the name of it is, but yeah, that's it.
All right, that one.
But it's a hidden gem. It's really good. And the lady's super friendly.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Well, those were the questions about Girona. I totally agree with a lot of things you said. It's the community is so nice over here.
Fantastic.
As I said in the previous first podcast, I've been here for 3 years, but it feels like home, you know?
Correct.
Everybody wants to try and help you or send you to these people or to that people if you need something with it. And it's a really nice place. And continuing on the stuff about Girona, as we already mentioned, we are here at the Office of Science and Sport. And since when do you guys have the office over here? Well, you actually just over a couple of months ago, you moved to the new place, right?
Yeah,
but say, since when did you have the other office?
So we've moved. This is the third time we've moved, so every time we needed to get bigger, we've moved. We first opened, if you want to call it, that was 2020, just before COVID.
Okay.
We actually opened, and I think we were open for like 6 weeks, and COVID hit.
Oh, wow.
And we were like, well, what have we done?
Yeah.
So 2020, and then from there, a year later, we moved onto Carinot. We needed a bigger space. For more services that were being requested, and then now we moved where we are now, I think also about 4 months ago.
Yeah, at the October, November-ish.
Yeah, I think, pretty much. And And that was also purely because of services being requested from us and that we could supply. Yeah. We needed bigger space.
What is it that you guys do more or provide more right now than you could in the previous office?
So from this side, more on the kind of the medical side, being the rehabilitation and the strength and conditioning side with Chris. So like the biomechanics that we always had done, the testing we had always done, but now we've added also we had added in running services in terms of testing, etc. So we've added that to our testing battery of services. And then, as I said, from the prehab, rehab side, we've added that in now with Chris. And as you heard earlier, I sold him the dream and brought him here from the UK.
Yeah, sweet, cool. Yeah, well, right now in the ND office, it's now possible as well for like strength and conditioning stuff, but you're already doing testing, bike fitting, coaching, these kind of things.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of questions about like what things you have seen in offices in the previous years. Like for example, what are the most common issues people have when they come for a bike fit, for example?
Our biggest pet hate is probably a slam stem. That is our most common thing that kind of affects your bike fit down the chain, if you want to call it that. But a very common thing is obviously saddle sores.
Saddle soreness,
saddle soreness. And then, that's probably our number one kind of problem that someone comes with. And then it goes all the way, obviously, just if someone is coming with a big injury, and it goes to more from like a medical assessment slash into that bike fitment and then follow up going forward with the athlete. And then the other most common thing is purely just discomfort. They may have gotten wherever it was, a fit from a friend or somebody else, and it just hasn't been right, and they've just for his final tweak and something like that.
What is it? I've been with your colleague Daryl for a couple of bike fits, but what is it like when
he's the one that does all the work?
Okay, by the way,
cool.
Shout out to Daryl.
Yeah, shout to Daryl.
But what is it like when people come in and they come for a bike fit? Like, how do you start and how do you like go through the whole process?
Yeah, sure. So first, we do a full physiological assessment on them. So we first try to find out if there's injuries. Is that a limiting factor? What do we need to take into account? Then we do physical measurements like leg length, full leg length. We do lower leg length. We do flexibility, arm length, sit and reach. We do the Kier flexation, and obviously height and weight. And then from that, based on that information, based on, as we said, if there is a injury we need to take into account, then our bike fit kind of focuses from that onwards in terms of where we want to go as an outcome.
Okay, cool. What do you think is in the last years you've been here with Science Sport, but also previously, has bike fitting changed over the years?
No, definitely.
Yes.
Like as a company, we also do a lot of we publish a lot of research. So whether that's testing or, whether it's an athletic side or whether it's biomechanics, we do a lot of research and have publications. But what we have found is, as an example, the C-tube isn't the same now across whatever, if we take the big five, so Trek, Specialized, etc.
Yeah.
And that needs to be taken into account. So what your bike, you may have a great set up on your Lapierre, but that doesn't transfer directly, say, to your SL8. So those days where you just cross in that. The thing that we have found, especially in ladies racing, with how that has developed over the years and it's become more and more aggressive, bike changes and positioning has changed with that, according to the style, a little bit of the style of racing. And the second knock-on from that is what we found is, as that has developed and changed over the years, a normal kind of nowadays, a basic men's saddle doesn't always work now for a female, where before it did because of the positions and stuff from the racing aspects has changed. So there have been many different things. You know, hip angle has changed, pelvic angle has changed, a lot of talk about cradle legs, and these people don't know what I'm doing. So, I mean, if I had like 50 cents for every time someone emails or WhatsApps me about things,
I'd be doing this from my villa in, I don't know, Switzerland, Swiss Alps.
Thailand.
Yeah,
in Thailand. I see, in Thailand.
Yeah.
It definitely has changed, and you know, as I would say, I wouldn't say a fitter, but as a biomechanics person, you need to take that into account.
Cool.
What is I don't know if you do it yourselves, but for sure your colleagues as well. What is in your view biggest difference in coaching cyclists or triathletes or mountain bikers even?
So if you go road cyclist and mountain biker, it's not that it's a completely different approach and style. It's more that sort of last 10% on specificity is what you do, and is where that kind of comes into the coaching aspect across the discipline. So, well, that's what I feel, and that's how I approach it. So, yes, it's, you know, your approach is the same in inverted commas,
yep,
but that last sort of 10, maybe 15% of specificity is what changes to that discipline. The triathlete side, I don't coach many of them, none actually. I just find.
But you do work with it,
So, like from a company side, we have a big volume,
yeah,
like, and we have a large volume of them from amateur all the way through to right to the highest level. I just personally, from my side, don't. But from there, you know, it's your biggest key point is getting all three disciplines correct within that periodization. I do coach a guy for his cycling, but he has a running and a swimming coach. You know, so the three of us are talking constantly. So there, it's a good, healthy relationship.
Yep.
Where sometimes you don't have that is where the running coach, just as an example, is just, well, it's only like, you know, this is what we have to do for running. And you're saying, okay, but you can't do this load forever because the swimming coach is saying that. And the cycling guy is saying that. So,
and then you end up doing tree fields or wax sessions.
Yeah, exactly my point. You know, you just like, okay, the guy's done six of these like massive efforts in a week. When what's going to happen?
When is rest? Yeah.
So, yeah, that is the difference between...
Is there a difference in between this... I wanted to say type of people, but like type of sports people, cyclists, cyclists, mountain bikers, or triathletes, in terms of when they come in for bike fit, it's like total different requests or those kind of things? Or
yes and no. Like a triathlete, typically what I find is they want to go to the extreme of aerodynamics, where if it's super short, yes, you can go extreme. But if they're doing, as an example, like Kona, you know, you need to find the balance between, yes, aerodynamics, but also being able to, are you stable to be able to produce power all that time? You know, so...
And there's a sport after cycling as well.
Correct. Where our biggest, I would say, education point for the triathletes that come in here is you need to run off the bike.
Yeah.
Like, if you cooked from being super aggressive, you're not going to run well. So, or it's a limiting factor to run well. So we try... educate them to say, hey, I know you want to go super aggressive, but you do understand you need to run 10, 15, 20, 30, 50 Ks after this. You know, like, then you kind of go back to your coach and you shout at the running coach, but it's because you're just too aggressive. So that is something we try educate athletes on. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I had actually a question about... I always see and hear quite a lot of things when coaches or people like give a schedule like 13 times 30-30 or 50s, these kind of things. You know, for listeners, 30-30s is like 30 seconds almost like CO2 max or full out of, correct? Very hard, and then 30 seconds really easy, and then times-ish.
Yeah,
is times on time. But I think you do it as well. I think a lot of people are doing it 13 times. Why is it specifically 13 times?
Yeah, so that would be 30-15. So 30 seconds on, 15 off.
Yeah,
and that's based off Ronisted's study, you know, that he had in terms of, you know, in short, the conclusion is that's what's optimal. You know, so it would be 13 times 30-15, 10-minute break, and then repeat another two times, or one time, depending where the athlete is, you know, in terms of have they done it, what their level is, etc. But yeah, 30-15s is yeah, it's a good money maker.
Yeah, I often thought. Yeah. You know, I was thinking like, well, why the hell 13? But this coming from a guy who's all
Ron is dead. Okay, so it's based off his study.
Cool.
Yes.
And
you know, I've been session like this, like 13-15s or 40-20s or any kind of these. Okay. You can send them out or put them in a program, whatever. But what is your vision about, like, when do you implement it in the training?
So it essentially depends on what time of the season they're at, or what do I want to get with the athlete. So at the moment, if I just use an athlete as an example, he's actually a mountain biker, a marathon rider. I've wanted to, in the off season, increase his VO2. And then try get his threshold closer to his VO2 value. So this year we had done it very different, where I'd started prescribing early in the season, not a big volume, but just a total volume in that week or training, just to kind of start introducing that and getting it going. So that's a kind of a little bit different to what people normally think where that would go. Otherwise, the other side to that is would be when you kind of in that last block of phase, last training block or meso or microcycle, and you want to kind of go into that peak phase and you start hitting those then.
Cool.
So yeah, I kind of implemented a little bit in two different ways.
Yeah,
in different ways on what I want to achieve with that athlete.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I do it myself sometimes as well, like 3:15s or 3:30s or 40:20s, whatever. But I think I have the feeling always that if you do it for a couple of weeks, you'll get fit very fast.
Yeah, no,
it's a super, super hard training.
Yeah, it's super hard. Like,
but it's really nice to do. Or I don't know if it's even nice to do it, but it's, and you get something out of it.
No, you get definitely. Like, the other way I do always implement it, like whether it's 30-15s or 40-20s, as you said, also really good session, is if the athlete comes and he goes, hey, like, whatever's happened in my calendar, I need to be good. I need to try to be ready in 2 weeks. Then, to be honest, it's just like 40-20s, 30-15s, and it's kind of like a short.
And like, in 2 weeks' time, like every week one time, or
probably twice a week,
yeah.
And maybe 2-3 days apart, if that's the case. But just kind of like, how do you say, just like a quick fix,
yeah.
And to try get them better than where they are today, and typically you kind of get a benefit out of it for the athlete. So
actually, I was thinking about it while we were having a talk about it. Do you think, because it's very common in cycling,
yeah,
this kind of training, do you actually think it's are you to say it valuable for running as well?
Yeah, 100%.
I think it's completely the same, right? Yeah, for us, it's the training itself. I mean, you train for your heart and for your lungs, these kind of things, and it's
like, with, you know, you essentially want to train a certain time anaerobically or on your VO2 to increase, to be fast or whatever. You know, yes, at the end of the day, VO2 in today's application to training is not your holy mark, holy grail of performance anymore. You know, yes, it's good to have a high VO2, but yeah, it's not what it used to be anymore.
I think until like 4 or 5 years ago it was, right?
Yeah, correct. Even further, if you had a VO2 of 85, you were like given a contract, even if you couldn't run or ride a bike. So, you know, where that, now you look at, you know, you would look at a complete metabolic profile of the athlete, you know, so maybe a lower VO2, but their fat oxidation is really good for someone like yourself. That to me would be probably a better metric that I would look at. So, but at the end of the day, you need to, you know, have a good VO2 at the end of the day, and have that sort of lactate capacity.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're actually sitting almost in the part of the strength and conditioning part of the scientist's work.
Yeah,
what is your take with coaching cyclists or on strength training in general? I mean, in what way do you like implement it for the people at Bora? You coach.
Yeah. So for me, I'm a strong believer and component of SNC.
Yep.
Cyclist for runners, especially from an injury side, whether you're a triathlete, it doesn't matter. For me, I'm a strong believer in it. I believe it has very good benefits. The caveat or the second to that is obviously it's a secondary sport. if you want to call it that, or a secondary discipline as an add-on. So planning it at the right time throughout your season is important, and what you do.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you periodize your S&C work like you periodize your training prescription on the bike or on your running or whatever, it'll work super well. It's where you kind of see it, where it works the other way, where, you know, maybe the S&C guy or the athlete doesn't understand that and they just hit gym and they typically do too much and then you have a negative effect. You know, it's like, but it's the same. If you do too much 30-15s, you're going to have a negative effect.
Yeah. So for me, yeah, really important. What is it? I'm sorry, it's really worse. I think until a couple of years ago, it was like gym is for winter. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure. But I think it has changed all year as well, right?
Yeah, for me, it's all year round.
Yeah.
You know, again, it's proper application. You've got to know what you're doing, or the person helping you needs to know what they're doing correctly. You know, so from that side, it's right place at right time. But for me, it's an all year round, it's an all season round application benefit to your training.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, actually, you like continue on the strength creation part. I would like to ask a question I was actually having for a little bit later on, but I wanted to ask right now before we like move on to questions from listeners.
Yeah,
it's like in general, actually, what is your now everybody has their own vision or philosophy about like how they think is the best to do to as a coaches or the athletes we train. What is your like philosophy about training? If like for example. I think whenever you start working for a cycling season in this, but you start end of October, beginning of November, right?
Yeah.
What is it like you do in November, December, January? What is it like coming towards like the racing season, like in terms of training, different kind of training?
So I don't have a philosophy per se, like as an example, an 80-20 or a threshold model, et cetera. So yeah. I definitely don't have that. I use sort of all of that within my coaching library, if you want to call it that. And what I do though is I do periodized training, you know, so I do blocks and meso microcycles. But to say that, you know, perfect example, what I said now about the mountain biker doing kind of VO2 work in November, December or December, January is not your typical what people think in, you know, on how training goes. But typically, if I do take it as a general point, in that off season leading in, especially for the first 2 months, I do try focus and improve an athlete's neuromuscular pathways and their fat oxidization and a bit of lactate clearance, you know, or lactate utilization. So then I will say is kind of a good starting approach in terms of methodology of what I
do. If I do understand, it's like create a base, but also do like really hard kind of things a little bit, right?
Yeah, not really hard thing, but there are some hard things, but you know, that
clearance kind of, yeah, correct.
So you are definitely going to be working.
Yeah.
But yeah, as I said, it's not that I follow a help. Boom, 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 blocks.
Yeah.
It's really what I want to get out the athlete when they start racing in the new year.
Yeah.
But I, you know, the athletes that know me and people that know me, it would definitely be improved lactate utilization, neuromuscular pathways, and fat oxidization is typically a good starting point for me with an athlete in that preseason block.
Yeah. And I think Hansio, like, a couple of years ago, maybe 10 years or 5 years ago, I don't know. And I think it's changed a little bit because Norwegian kind of input, but also like Matthew Van Der Poel and Wout van Aert and the cyclocrossers, where they have always like hammering themselves in winter, these medleys,
right.
Instead of like doing months and months and months of like these endurance kind of stuff.
Right. Yeah,
that's I think the biggest change to what happened in coaching. In
yeah, so those days are definitely a little bit... over in a way,
yeah.
You know, I was speaking now actually to a really old school pro, like 2006, very, very popular guy,
yep.
Very popular rider and rode it at the highest level. You know, and he said to me that he doesn't understand today's fit, you know, prescription.
Yeah.
Because he was like, this time in the year, I'm doing 35 hour weeks of just riding my bike. And I was like, yo, mate, those days are over. There's a thing called science now.
Imagine how good you could have been.
Yeah, exactly. And really, he was super good. I give him that, you know. So,
well, if everybody does the same at one point, it's still always the best.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, but, you know, even him to say, you know, hey, it's definitely changed was, you know, was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, like, I can imagine. All right, let's continue on to the, I've got a couple of questions from listeners as well, or for people who were, I asked on Instagram.
Tribe exactly.
Yeah. This will be the questions from your ex-digital.
That's what I'm worried about.
No. What is your view on the, like the increasing amount of science in coaching and training? It's like every year or every couple of years, there's more and more and more like knowledge coming out, but also like things to like tests or I don't know, lactic sensors in heart rate, your barrels or things to measure what's happening inside of the muscles. What is your view about it and how you use it?
Yeah, so it's definitely, there's a lot, if you want to use that term. What you need to kind of identify is what is useful and what is not. Because there is a lot of really useful tools out there, if we call them tools, and there's also a lot that is just purely smoke and mirrors, you know. And people get caught up where, you know, they reading everything, and because you're inquisitive or you know have a knowledge in your some knowledge, you get lost so deep down the rabbit hole. So, you know, for me, it's identify, I think, with yourself what you feel works, and limit that also to very few tools, you know, and use those tools well, and just make sure that there is validation behind those tools. I think that's what your most important is, because there is so much out there now, and you see so much stuff, and you just like, mate,
especially where you see other people using this and you think, oh, I need to use it as well. And
correct, you know, like there was something that came across my desk the other day, and I was like, mate, this is such shit. Like I said, I don't know if I can swing it on your phone.
Yeah.
But I was like, this is just a complete smoke and mirrors. Like, this is a magic show. But yet, you know, there's a lot of money behind the product, and it's now being punted that you just like this. Yeah. And there's nothing behind this.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your view on the effectiveness of torque or like low cadence training on the bike? And how do you implement it in your...
Yeah, very... So when I'd mentioned the neuromuscular work, that is what I was referring to. Very, very strong believer in it, very strong component within my coaching tools, if you want.
I think it's also a little bit some sort of part of like the strength and conditioning-ish. Or is it?
So yes and no. So, you know, essentially you're creating neuromuscular pathways.
Yeah.
So you are getting stronger, but it won't... replace doing gym work.
Okay.
You know, you do different things.
Sure.
You know, one's concentric, other one is eccentric.
Yeah.
There is, I'm a strong believer in it. You know, as a company, you know, we've been prescribing this since, I mean, like 2004, 2005.
Oh, wow.
You know, and we, not to say that we are the,
whatever, the church of low cadence,
yeah. But what I'm saying is, you know, when we read stuff now and that, and it's like, oh, that's like new low cadence. You're like, mate, this has been around for 100 years. But there is definitely a group of people that see the benefits, and there's also a group of people that are very anti it. You know, I can say that I've seen the benefits across athletes. There is some new research coming out soon, hopefully, that will be completed with regards to the actual proper low cadence, because some of the research that has been out, it's like a cadence of 70 or 80, and you're like, okay, but that's high cadence essentially. So
low cadence is 50, 60 ish.
Yeah, or even if you're well conditioned, like 40, 45.
Yeah.
You know, again, but you need to be a conditioned athlete or person for that. But huge benefits, definitely a positive outcome. Obviously, the negative of that is don't start too low. You can obviously have some knee pain or whatever. So, you know,
be careful.
Just be careful and be mature when doing it. But for me, massive component.
And how do you, like, prescribe it to your athletes? Is it like, for example, 5 minutes on this cadence, on this watts? Or is it more like specifically torque?
Yeah, so for myself, I like, in terms of duration, 4 and 10 minutes.
Okay.
You can play around a little bit, but for me, I
prescribe on the Newton meters of torque value. So Newton meters per kilogram. So as an example, you know, if it's a beginner or they first introduced to it, I would maybe do like 0.5, 0.6 Newton meters per kilogram for 10 minutes. And if it's a really good, strong, really conditioned athlete, maybe, you know, over 1 Newton meter, 1.2, 1.3, but everything within that range. That's how I prescribe it. I know some people do prescribe on a power value and a cadence, completely fine for me, but I look at the actual value being Newton meters of torque, and which is what I want.
You have seen a couple of people coming in, but what do you think the sport of triathlon can learn from the sport of cycling and the other way around?
I think both have really actually, you know, you can always learn from another sport. I'm really a true believer in that. Even from a cycling, you can learn something from running. What can you learn? I think, although it's a little bit in both, but, you know, from a triathlon side, I feel that the general approach is more is better. Where I think if you put the more quality on the bike, like a cyclist does, you get better benefits. You know, for me, more isn't always better. And when you do speak to, in general, a triathlete, it's always, you know, if a cyclist has 3 hours with 3x10, triathlete's done 5 hours with 3x10, and you're like, or 4x10. So, yeah, you know, I just think maybe that, I won't say attention to detail because that's not the right word, but just that specificity, I think, would go a long way for the triathlon.
That's it. Yeah. What do you think is
of course, by coaching people, or at least you want to get the maximum like results out of somebody. But what is, I think there are more things to it than only results.
Yeah,
with coaching. What is your like? What do you think is important in like coaching people? What are more important things in coaching people than only a resource for you?
As if they improve. So, you know, if they come to me and they, example, their 10 minute power is 300 watts, and then over X period of time, they're doing, or at the end of the season, it's 315, and they have been more consistent.
Yep.
That to me is a win. Simple as that. You know, so as long as there's progression,
yeah,
that to me is more important than a result.
Sure.
Because the result should come.
Exactly. I just wanted to say, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What is something that athletes or maybe even coaches forget, which deserves more attention?
That the person you're working with is still a human being. You know, it's not a robot. So you need to take that psychological or the pathological, whatever you want to call it, into account.
Yeah.
You know, you look at a data file that tells you one thing, but you as an athlete tells you a completely different thing. You know, there you may look at a great session, and then you find out, you know, the guy came home and his wife's with the pool boy, but there's no pool, and there's like a whole lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's like, you know, there's a lot more than what happens on trail beats or whatever.
You know, so for me, I feel sometimes you forget that you're also dealing with a human being and from a psychological
point. I do think, of course, I think you guys at Bora, for example, are working with sports psychology people as well.
Correct.
But I think being a coach, you're even more than only a guy who gives out schedules, I think, right?
Yeah, you should be. Otherwise, you know, for me, it's, you can just download something off the internet and then you've got a training program. There's millions available, you know, but as a coach, for me, that personal connection is really important. You know, if I use myself as an example, if I feel I don't have that connection with the athlete, I would suggest maybe working, if they're in our company, working with another athlete, another coach in our company.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's super important that.
Nice.
Question from the listeners or from the...
Yeah.
And this is from a different South African.
Okay.
Well, he is living in Girona as well.
Okay.
What is your favorite South African saying?
I can't say that, yeah. Definitely not.
Okay. Well, you should tell me that after.
Yeah, I'll tell you after. No, I can't say that, yeah. Definitely not on air, but it has to do with an animal, and I can't say that.
All right. I will have to go.
I think I'll close your podcast. So.
Already have a new episode.
Oh, exactly.
Well, we will come out for sure. All right, man.
Well, okay, I think we have arrived at the final part of it, but I think we had been speaking quite a lot of time already, right?
You know, yeah, quite early there. I think maybe even about 55 minutes or something like that.
Right.
So we'll...
Time flies when you're under pressure.
Exactly. So I don't want to keep you on that long anymore, but we will go quickly through these other kind of things.
Sure.
Yeah, as I told you at the beginning, I think it's nice to also have a little bit of view towards 2025 and on. I think new season approaches for Rebel Bora, Edgegrove, but for you as coach as well. Yeah, what are I think you actually like, how many coaches are there at the team?
At Science and Sports or at Bora?
At Bora?
At Bora, there's five of us.
Five of us?
Yeah, okay. Correct. It's myself, Mark, Dan,
yeah.
He's also our head of coaching, Sylvester, Paolo, and Henry.
Yep, you know, six. What are the...
Of course, I do follow cycling,
yeah.
But I don't follow like
one team in general. What is like the biggest goal for the Bora team this year?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, with Red Bull coming on board, there's been a lot of positive, stuff that has come in. So we've been able to make us a really positive performance step up in terms of what we are able to do now. So I would say that, you know, I suppose any team that is based on this, you'd like to win a Grand Tour, Giro Vuelta Tour, be competitive in the classics, and just be better, to be honest, in what we were last season. You know, we were fifth in rankings last year. Obviously, it's now to improve and step up from that.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, I think if you don't step up or improve or whatever, you stand still.
Yeah,
and standing still.
Yeah, I mean, you're our employee, but also standing still means, yeah, you're going to end us.
Yeah, correct. I mean, other teams are there for sure to try and beat you guys, and for sure the same as you guys.
If you really look at it in a nutshell, you want to win races.
Yeah.
Simple, be on the podium. And if you are a Grand Tour or a GC-based team, you always want to win a Grand Tour. You know, so I suppose that those are our goals. Luckily, we've won already at World Tour level in Australia now.
Cool.
Yeah, three times with Sam Walsh.
Yeah,
sure. So we started the year off well. It's good feeling in the team, and it's now about carrying that momentum back into Europe going forward.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. Yeah, you just mentioned it a short while, but with Rebel coming up last year, I think halfway of last year, right?
Yeah, correct. So they were announced at the tour in July.
What is it... But as well for you as a coach, what is like, what has been different? I mean, are you guys also going to, I think the headquarters is in Austria, I think? How do you guys work with them?
Yeah, so it's the APC, so the Athlete Performance Center. The biggest change, I think, is we really have a lot of Red Bull now. You can drink the cola, everything is really great. But, you know, from where what we felt in that is, it's still kind of to be felt, I feel, now going forward from this year onwards, because there was a lot of obviously workings behind with them coming on board. But definitely, from a performance side, we have, there's definitely been an improvement in performance, if you can say that. And that's in all aspects, which has helped us now elevate going forward. So I would say that is... and resources available is what it is.
Okay.
What is I must say, I don't really know in what way you have been working together with these kind of guys, but you have been in these two teams for sure.
Yeah.
What is a difference between and maybe you know it from other coaches, I don't know, but coaching Tadej Pogačar or Primož Roglič?
Yeah, so if you just go personality type, believe it or not, they're actually very similar in personality. Both actually humorous guys, funny guys, fully focused in terms of what they need to do in terms of performance, etc. I wouldn't say each guy has that own sort of, personality trait, but you're working with essentially your highest level athlete, that you can really work at. So that approach, focus, etc., and that attention to detail is there. How I can say it is that when you're around an athlete like that, or period of time, etc., is that it makes you want to do your job better because of
where they are. Get so much more motivated.
Yeah, correct. So, you know, if I take an athlete of, or in general, of that thing, it makes me want to do my job better, and I look for how I can be better, whether it's a small thing, etc. So it has an effect on the team, if you say.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's something I want to ask as well, because you mentioned there are like 5 coaches in a team.
Yeah, everybody has, I don't know how much, but like 4 or 5, I think, riders.
Yeah,
right, who they coach. But of course, everybody has like different kind of riders. So, well, some people go for GC, some people go for this. I don't know if it's got a mix of them, but still, you've got 5 coaches and there's one team.
Yeah.
It's like the philosophy, or we have talked about a little bit about like the way you coach a cyclist. Is it the same for like every, for the coach in the whole team? Or does some coaches have a little bit of a different approach and then I belong more to a different kind of?
Yeah, so your team has a philosophy.
Yeah.
Okay. If you want an approach, etc., to coaching, but every coach has that. That's personal thing,
gotcha.
You know, or their flair, if you want to call it that, you know. So the answer is yes and no.
Yeah.
If you did have one way, you would simply have one coach for the whole team and it would be copy paste, and that's not coaching. You know, again, you can download that off the net for a lot cheaper than hiring 5-6 coaches. So yes, you have a philosophy. We have a head coach, which is Dan Lerang, phenomenal guy.
Also well known in, yeah, triathlon. You know his name from triathlon, of course.
Phenomenal. Yeah, I mean, like, absolutely phenomenal what he does. And
what are the things that you learned from a guy like that?
So from Dan, to be honest, what I learned more about from him, which I'm very grateful for, and that is, it's more around not really a coaching prescription in terms of, hey, do this on the day.
Yeah.
It's more on athlete management, where, you know, if I go to him and I say, hey, Dan, you know, I've got this problem with an athlete, the way he looks at getting to solving the solution is very different to how I would have done it, in general. And I'd learned that very well off him. Something I've definitely stolen and sponged from him, and helped me become better at what I do.
Yeah.
And yeah, he has a very different approach to that.
Cool. What is what do you like? What do you like the most? Coaching athletes who go for general qualification,
yeah,
sprinters, classics. What is your, like, what do you really like most?
GC is my thing. I do like the classics guys as well. I'll be honest, I'm probably, I think, in the history of World Tour, the worst sprint coach you could actually find. and I'm appointing myself that.
Well, I mean, yes, I think it's also good to know your good things and your bad things.
Yeah, no.
Probably the team doesn't send you much traders. I think therefore.
Yeah, definitely. But at the same time, I'm very open and I say, hey, I don't believe I'm the best guy for the job. You know, I've worked with sprinters and I've been successful with them,
yep.
But I have felt that, you know, this coach is better than what I am at that. Because at the end of the day, the outcome is always the athlete. It's not you. As you know, I could go, oh, I can do okay and I'll win with him and I look good. But at the same time, he could win more with a better sprint-specific coach.
Yeah.
And for me, as I said, it's always about the athlete. So you have to put the athlete in the best environment that they can be in.
Yeah, nice.
But essentially, it's tour riders, whether it's 1 week tours or grand tours. Like, that's my...
There's nothing better than that, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Have you been, and then we move on to the last question of this
almost podcast, but I've got a final question as well. But how many grand tours have you done now?
Or like been with the team for your grand tours?
92. It's like 2 a year. On every kind of, like, I've done 2 a year. And then multiples, the week longs, but you are probably 2 a year.
Is it also, well, of course, it's 3 weeks really hard in there, so, but is that also the thing you enjoy the most?
Yeah, I do. I know this is going to sound super weird, but I love it in the third week of a grand tour because you see how good, like how strong, big someone's motor is, like whether they're a staff member and that, like that third week is just...
Yeah, not only
your staff and that, I don't know, to me there's nothing better than, like, when I know I've got to go to Grand Tour, I'm like away for 24 days and I hate it. Or when I'm in it, I don't know, there's nothing better. And like when you're at the tour, it's, I don't know, for me, it's your holy grail of being somewhere.
Oh, I would reckon. Yeah. I think I also can imagine that, especially probably in this third week,
yeah,
you get to know people, right?
Yeah, very, very well. And you get to know which humates bad coffee. So yeah, it's that third week of a Grand Tour is
yeah, it says everything.
Nice.
Yeah. What is I'll ask this question before. I think well, we talked a little bit about strength and conditioning as part of training coaching.
Yeah.
But also in since a couple of years for cyclists, running has become more and more popular.
Yeah,
how do you correct work it, or how do you guys at Bora use running into?
Yeah, I wouldn't say we use it at Bora as a, hey, this is a tool you need to implement it at all. You know, if you just take running in general for a cyclist, it is good. It's an eccentric muscle motion,
yep.
So it's really good. Does in the off season, helps you kind of keep a bit trim and lean and trim. You know, but I'm not saying go run like a 20K marathon or whatever the case may be, but you know, in general, I like it in limited quality. You know, you always see here when I sit on the couch here in the off season and you see all these cyclists and our runners, and then they come in here when they start riding bikes and they, oh, I've got a knee pain, there's a problem on the bike. I'm like, no, mate, because I've seen you doing like 50 laps around town here and you've never run all year. So, you know, everything in moderation, but, you know, short, 30 minutes, whatever, twice a week, I can't see it hurting you. Yeah.
Well, yes, what are the things coming up for you, 2025? What is something you really look forward to?
I'm looking forward to the Grand Tours, like straight up. I really like them.
You already told that True Down Under, they have started the season already, but I think from next week on,
yeah,
everything is like,
so Europe starts, Mallorca starts soon. Some, like, in general, I'm looking forward to the racing. I really enjoy the racing, obviously.
Yeah.
From that side, I'm looking forward to stuff that the team has worked on in the off season and leading up to now to be implemented, and you know, the riders getting the benefits from it. And then from a business side, we have a lot on the go. We have quite a lot of research that we need to publish that's coming to an end.
Where is it coming out when it's published?
Some are in review now, and then some we kind of started data collecting.
Yeah.
So it's kind of everywhere in the process.
Where is it going to be published?
Whichever kind of medical publication, et cetera, wherever we can get it in. I don't have names right now.
But I mean, in a sense of like, how can people
find it? It'll be online. So like typically we do post, hey, this has been published. So it will be online. You will be able to download it, et cetera, whatever. So from that side, it will be readily available. From the business side is kind of keep doing what we're doing. We are looking at expanding. Like we do have, obviously, Girona, Cape Town, South Africa. We do have a facility now in conjunction with Wolfies in Abu Dhabi. And we are looking at opening up another location in conjunction with somebody else. And then, kind of keep doing what we're doing in terms of services. So, a lot on the go, but I will say, luckily, we do have phenomenal staff in Science to Sport that take 90% of the workload, and I'm just the guy that goes, okay, on an email, and then away it goes. So, from a work perspective, and then obviously from the very personal on the Red Bull Boro side is obviously our rookie development project is brand new. I'm super excited to see how that goes and what we've implemented and guys that you've signed and our processes. So a lot going on, a lot to be excited for.
Sounds good, man. Sounds good. I think I think we can talk for like hours and hours and hours more, and there's so much more to like find out and pick our knowledge from. Yeah. But I think we have been talking quite a lot already. Maybe for a second time somewhere in the future.
Halfway in the year, we see.
Maybe indeed, see what happened.
Let me see if I'm still so positive.
Exactly. Yeah, it would be a cool thing. I will hold you on to that.
again, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Alan.
And I do have one final question I'd like to ask, and it is the question, what is the one thing you would say you would want to say to your younger self?
Sure. Be more patient, to be honest. That's it. Like, definitely be more patient. Definitely be more patient and let things flow. I would definitely say that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
John, thank you so much. Where can people follow you? Where can people
I don't know if it's a good thing to follow me on Instagram, because I post really weird stuff what goes on in my head, so it's not always like cycling related.
Sport?
Yeah, science to sport. Science to sport. Pillow Train is my Instagram. It's also my Twitter or X, whatever you call it now. Science to sport. Follow Red Bull. It's a great team. Support them. You have to. If you're listening to the podcast and if you're in Girona, I really have no issue. Pop in and come and say hello.
Sweet, man. Thank you so much, Dan, for having this amazing conversation. To all the listeners who made it through this time. Thanks for listening. And I really enjoyed the episode today, and I hope you do as well. Somewhere in the future, in a couple of weeks' time, we will be coming with the next episode. And until that time, make sure to give Grit Radrona a follow as well on Instagram. Give Tridon Inside a follow on Instagram. Give John and your follow on Instagram if you would like to see the cool stuff. And give me, Milan Bronze, a follow on Instagram as well. And with that being said, see you guys in the next episode.
Yeah, thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be on.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This podcast is brought to you by the Triathlon Media Platform and Community, Triathlon Inside.